If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
You know, things fall to the wayside, things break apart, and it can happen anytime. The average partnership lasts 3 to 7 years. It's just the data behind it, you know, and lo and behold, my first one was on the very beginning of that. So it was right at like 3.5 years that it blew up, and it's super painful. And it's, I learned the most that I ever learned from that experience.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Garrett Lynch graduated from Illinois State University with a degree in marketing, sales, and organizational leadership in 2009. He then went on to manage a successful nightlife business in Chicago and then began leveraging his contacts to invest in small multifamily projects with foreign investor capital. With his appetite for mostly larger multifamily complexes, he joined forces with Michael Blanc to acquire 150-plus unit value-add multifamily assets around the country. Garrett, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Sam.
Man, it's awesome. Pleasure to have you on here. Same questions I ask everybody who comes on. If you can just give us an idea of where you started, where you are now, and how you got there.
I started actually in nightclubs in Chicago after college. I was like running nightclubs. And my job was basically to get really wealthy people into the most exclusive places around the country from like a partying club standpoint. And so I ran into somebody who was one of my customers at the time, and he was having a great time. And I was just like thinking to myself, because I was young, I was like 23 at the time. And I'm like, I don't know if I want to do this club thing for that long, because I probably will die in like 7 years at the pace that I'm going and the nights. And so I asked him, I was like, hey, what are you doing to make this money to be able to do what you're doing? And he was younger too. And he's like, yeah, well, I own 150 houses in Indiana. And I was like, whoa, that sounds interesting. How do you do that? And so he said something, I didn't understand it. And then I kind of picked his brain a bit over the next couple of weeks. And then he wanted to hang out and go out for like 20 days in a row. And so I invited him to come live with me for a minute. So he came and lived with me for a little bit. And in that 20-day process, I learned about his business and his real estate. And then I was like, can I work with you? And then we started working on a project together, basically wholesaling properties in the south side of Chicago. And so that lasted for about maybe a year or so. And then we went to work for somebody who had 1,000 apartments after that. And so worked for this guy for only probably like 6 months. Cut our teeth a little bit. I had some investors built up by that time. And then we decided that I actually got caught up in a Ponzi scheme. All my savings went to zero and I was flat broke. And we decided in that moment to start a company. And that was in 2013. Yeah, the Ponzi scheme, I didn't even realize it was a Ponzi scheme until about a year ago, came out that this guy had been doing the same thing to people over like 7 year period and just finally got caught. He screwed a guy out of $10 million. So he took my last savings. I was literally like flat broke, living on credit cards for a minute. And I was like, dude, I have nothing. And we didn't have a choice. We're like, we either start this company or we're like destroyed. You know, he was in on it too. So we started the company and we just had this like fire behind us because we were so busted up from that big loss. And but we had connections. We had like all the components we needed. Because you know, we had a guy that gave us basically $1 million to get started with. And so we used that to get bank loans and we used that to buy portfolios of D-class properties in the south side. So we cut our teeth kind of buying these terrible portfolios. And then we bought our first 50 unit. And we're like, oh, we can buy a 50 unit. We somewhere along the line, we figured out a connection that would cut us checks essentially as a syndicator. So this guy would come in as an LP and invest with his investors through his LLC. And so we could just get checks whenever we wanted for deals that we wanted to do. And so once we found that, we were like, shoot, let's buy some more stuff. Bought a 120 unit. Then we bought our first 380 unit in Memphis. So it was really cheap. And we're like, wow, we can buy 380 unit for almost the price of the 120 because it's in Memphis. Well, another very D-class asset that was really crazy, horrible, but it kind of opened our mind, expanded to, oh, we could do this on a larger scale. Let's keep going. And so we ended up buying 3,400 units in about 3.5 years. So we just kept going. We got screwed by a few management companies in the beginning. So we ended up self-managing all of it. I didn't know anything about any of this stuff. HR, I didn't even know what that was. I never worked for anyone really, except for that one guy for 6 months. And so we built out this whole like thing, this whole business, and it became huge. And then it got to like kind of this really big spot. And then my partnership blew up completely for a number of reasons. Then when that blew up, I was going from like 200 emails a day, like a major partner in this company, to lights out, lawyers, hoping that we could resolve it for a period of time. And so we finally resolved it after like 8 months. I got bought out of the company and just kind of did whatever I wanted for the next, I'd say like year, really. I was just kind of traveling, doing whatever I felt. I went to Asia and like Australia, just went all over the place. I acted as if I was retired when I was 29. And I realized I thought that the end game was to be on a beach and be rich as hell and just do whatever you want. And I soon realized that that was like completely empty. And I was miserable by the end of my travels. I was like, you know what? This is like, I'm not producing anything right now. There's no happiness in this type of situation at all. And so after that, I was like, well, I want to find that happiness again. How do I do that? Well, I have to be productive. Came back, flew back to the US, tried to do a bunch of little random business ventures, didn't like real estate at all, didn't like partners, didn't want anything to do with any of that stuff because of what I just went through. And then I finally, after a couple of these failed little weird businesses I opened up, I was like, you know what, I'm just going to try to get back into multifamily because I know so much, I have to figure this out. And I found Michael Blanc and I reached out to those guys and I was like, hey, if I bring you a deal, can we do it? You know, like, what would you guys want to do it? And they said, yeah. And so I brought them a deal, big, big deal, 545 units.
Wow.
And we went to, I was like, this is it. This is my redemption. We're going to do this deal. And so we went in, we signed up all the agreements. We started down into the raise and then had a series of really terrible things happen along the way between launching at the wrong time and not having, you know, trying to get institutional equity and having that back out last minute. Long story short, we locked the deal after a year of me trying, not making any money, not, you know, not having the win at the end and then actually losing all the earnest money that we put in. So we lost probably close to $300K in just like earnest money and all that stuff. First deal out the gate. So it was not off to the best start as far as acquisitions go. But luckily in that whole period of time, we realized that we worked really well together and they saw what I was capable of. I saw what they could do. And so we didn't want to kill each other after that. So we're like, oh, let's keep going. You know, let's try it. And so we ended up buying a deal in Little Rock that year that the deal fell apart. That was 2019, actually, like midway through 2019. Then another one at the end of Q4 2019. Bought a big deal in Huntsville. That one's crushing it. And we got hit with COVID. Didn't do much for the first part of the year. And then we bought two deals back to back, 130 unit, 150 unit in Atlanta. We raised $8 million on the first Atlanta deal and close to 12 million on the second one. So it was the last deal we did was $25 million for that one in Atlanta. And so now we're just on this trajectory. We're building a company and I get to kind of right all my wrongs from that first company, all the experience I got from that. I'm like, oh, I'm not going to do that this time on this company. And so it's been a lot of fun to just work really hard and see a ton of results from having the second kind of chance at the business. And that's kind of my spiel.
No, that's great. That's great. I think that's, they say there's no such thing as a free education, right? Like you're going to pay for it one way or another. So it sounds like you've really paid dearly to learn the lessons that you've learned. When it comes to some of those, I guess if we can, and maybe unfortunately we'll focus more on the negative aspects of your story, because those are things I think we can learn a lot from. Like, what are some of the things that you did in the first partnership? Because we hear about partnerships all the time. Everybody always says, you got to partner up if you're going to go. You know, you're going to go big, you know, you got to go with other people or something like that. You want to go fast, go alone to go, what do they say, to go big or something? I'm butchering it entirely. But you learned some lessons from one, the first partnership to the second one. And what were those things that you said, hey, I'm not doing those in round two?
one of the big ones was to have clearly defined roles and responsibilities within the partnership. I think that's super important, and to be willing to have the hard conversations often. So there's conversations, maybe there's a partner that's something they're doing is upsetting you. And I think having weekly meetings around partnerships and actually focusing it on the partnership is super important for the health of the partnership. Because it's like a marriage, and you really need to be on the same page at all times. And having that kind of a dynamic is super important to be able to being able to grow. And without that, you know, things fall to the wayside, things break apart, and it can happen anytime. The average partnership lasts 3 to 7 years.
Wow.
It's just the data behind it. So, you know, and lo and behold, my first one was on the very beginning of that. So it was right at like 3.5 years that it blew up, and it's super painful. And I learned the most that I ever learned from that experience. So I'm grateful for it, but I would prefer not to go through that again if I can avoid it. So I think that, you know, having success, talk about succession stuff, meet with, you know, planners around that, have a clearly defined exit strategy in the worst case scenario. You set that up before things turn south, because when there's a roadmap to the end, if that's the thing, and it's a very real thing that can happen. And so, you know, I don't have this mindset anymore. Like the first business was with my friend. You should be friends with these people that you're with. And I think that's important, but you need to have a worst case scenario type of roadmap. In the worst case scenario, it's just what it is. And so I think that's important.
Wow. No, that's fascinating. So you went off, and then you joined this coaching program, and then you went out and started finding assets again and said, hey, look, we're going to start afresh and start over. Have you changed what you invest in now? Are you still buying D-class assets, or like what?
No. So D-class was the worst idea ever. I don't suggest anybody, from my experience, is just horrible. They're tough finance. They're tough to, most times you got to recourse that on those things because banks don't want to lend in those areas. All these outside factors that you can't factor in your model. The underwriting model may look really attractive when you put it on paper, but all these outside forces that you can't, like fights and, you know, destruction of property and crime and all kinds of things that come up that you just, it's hard to put into the model. And then if you're not self-managing, it's nearly impossible to make those things successful. You have to do it. There's just too many things going on. And then there's not a lot of equity. It's more for cash flow. It's headache cash flow. Like it's going to make the phones ring a lot. So it's not really that passive, to be honest. So just a lot of things that I would never want to go back into that. Now the assets that we're buying now they're just gorgeous. You know, either they weren't gorgeous and we turned them gorgeous, or they are already. And we try to produce a premium product for the market that we're in, you know, as close to A-class as possible with B-class assets. And so it's a lot more fun. You don't have as many of the same problems on site. You can maintain better staff for longer. It's just a better, you're proud of the product that you create. You go there and you're making, you know, a ton of money on these things, but you're also proud of it. Versus I didn't really like being a slumlord. I was a slumlord. I didn't enjoy it because, you know, just the whole relationship aspect of it between you and the tenants, you and the managers, you and everything, it's just stressful.
Right. Yeah. And I'd imagine it's a lot more work for, in the end, a lot less money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
I would say so. It doesn't add in the equity component. So I think the real win is combination of equity and cash flow, and that sweet spot is perfect. But if you go too far into A-class, you're it's all equity, and then if you go too far in D-class, it's all cash flow, and you want to be somewhere in the middle.
Right. No, that's fascinating. When it comes to funding your deals, so you know, a lot of us, if we had gone through what you had been through and had partnerships blow up and things really go south, like how did you get, you know, circle the wagons back and say, hey, look, we're doing a new project, new venture, new money raise? Like, was there something mindset-wise that allowed you to go out and do that?
You know, it was just a process, to be honest, for me. In hindsight, I wish I went back on the horse sooner, but there was a lot of mental things that I had to battle to get back to even wanting to be in the business anymore.
Right.
That was for me for about 2 years, I just didn't even want to look at it. Just when you go through something like that, I mean, I did as much of the mindset stuff as I possibly could, but nothing really replaced jumping back in and overcoming your fear of getting involved in it. I mean, I basically had to start from zero. Like you have to, there's a lot you have to do to get back up on the horse by finding the partners, adding value to what they're doing. You have to, you know, typically people are starting at a spot where they have to rebuild. How am I going to find the equity? How am I going to find the balance sheet guarantors? Like all that stuff. So I gotta figure out how to get back in the business, and maybe there's a way to do it the right way versus how I was doing it before. I bet that exists. Let's just jump in. And a lot of business is like staring into the abyss and eating glass. That's Elon Musk says that a lot, where you just don't know the outcome and it's painful. And you just have to be okay with that.
Right. No, that's fascinating. Let's jump into the final four here if we can. If you were to distill everything you know that you've learned, both good and bad, from your real estate investing, what's one piece of advice you'd give to an aspiring investor?
The biggest thing is it's hard to do, but if you really trust your gut instinct along the way on your decisions, I would say 9 times out of 10, I'm right on those. If you have, if you really have a screaming instinct in one direction for a decision, whether it's not doing a deal with somebody or doing a deal with whatever it is, whatever that decision is, go with it and rely on that. If you can get good at recognizing that.
That's fascinating. That's a very intangible skill to develop, and it's a hard one to pay attention to, because there's a lot of things I think in our heads that would tell us to override those gut instincts. So kudos to you for mastering that skill. What's one thing you're currently doing to stay on top of your game?
So I'm constantly studying the market. And I call mortgage brokers, I call the commercial brokers pretty often just to get weigh in on exactly, I get like a play-by-play on the pulse of the markets that we're in. And I'm constantly studying other properties that are A-class properties that I actually go visit to see what kind of amenities they're doing, what kind of upgrades they're doing, what kind of styling design they're doing, just to kind of keep ahead of the trend and understand. I put a lot of design behind what I do and my renovations and everything like that. And so I want fresh ideas.
That's awesome. That's a great nugget. When it comes to giving back, what's one way you're making the world a better place?
I like to help people that are getting started or at a different level, you know, whatever level we're at in the real estate world, just by providing my insight, coming on podcasts like this as often as I can, talking to people one-on-one, just offering help in any way that I can to help them progress their careers. So
that's awesome. That's awesome. And if our listeners want to get in touch with you, Garrett, what's the best way to do that?
You can reach out to me, Garrett, GARRETT at Nighthawk, NIGHTHAWK, equity.com. So Garrett at NighthawkEquity.com.
Awesome. Garrett, thanks so much for your time today. Certainly appreciate it.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.